irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to All About Guitar with Jeff Lolo, only on LA Talk Radio.
Guitar, an amazing instrument. It has developed into an incredible voice in today's music. So many types of guitars, so many styles of playing, all sorts of gear. How does one make their voice be heard as a guitarist? My name is Jeff Floro, and welcome to All About Guitar, where we talk tone, we talk technique, we talk gear. Where we discover how we can become better musicians in a world of constantly changing technologies. Where we take a good look at everything guitar. And sometimes not exactly guitar, but just as important. So we can be more successful as a musician in today's music scene. So sit back and relax, and let's explore All About Guitar. Good evening, everybody. Welcome to All About Guitar. We have a great show for you tonight. I'm very honored to have on the show Paul Rivera Jr. of Rivera Amplification. And his dad was one of the key people, I think, that just changed the sound of electric guitar. Period in the history of our modern music. I remember when I was in college, people were talking about modding their amps, their Fender, especially the Fenders and the Marshalls, and he was one of the guys who was doing that. So we're going to talk a little bit about that, and they have a whole line of amps, and we're going to talk about their pedals that they have. So I want to welcome Paul. It's a pleasure. It's an honor to have you.
Thank you, Jeff.
And I have one thing to say to your dad, to shout out to your dad. Those concert amps that you made for Fender were just the most awesome amps ever. So I'll leave it at that. But anyway, let's talk a little bit about the history of what your dad was doing and how it evolved into Rivera Amplification or Rivera Amps, with the correct name.
Well, to skip ahead to the mid-70s, you know, because previously he was working in studios, you know, he was actually 16 years old when the SVTs were rolling off the assembly line. He worked for Ampeg briefly, and he worked as a consultant for Sony when he was like 15 as well. Mm-hmm. He had a beard then, so he looked older than he was. So he was really his own man, you know, really early on. But skipping ahead to the mid-70s when he was living in Los Angeles, after San Diego, he worked at a place called Valley Arts Guitar. Mm-hmm. And Valley Arts Guitar was a really famous guitar shop on Laurel Canyon in Ventura. And so being at Studio City, that was like the ultimate LA session hang for all the guitar players, like, you know, Jay Graydon, Steely Dan, and Steve Lukather of Toto, and Van Halen, and, you know, Paul Jackson Jr., and all those guys hung there. You know, they would just go in there for coffee, hang, play guitar. And even like the best, considered one of the best guitar teachers of all time, Ted Green. I don't know if
Ted Green.
His name.
Ted Green.
Yeah. He was a teacher there. So like his students were like Paul Jackson Jr. and stuff. You know, and in fact, Ted Green taught Jay Graydon harp harmonics. Mm-hmm. You know, that's how legendary the place was. So, anyways, not to get too far off on Valley Arts Guitar, but anyways, my dad was on the top, and at the time, LA session guys, you know. Like you're going to find out from Andrew Sinewick's life, a current session guitarist right now in LA.
Welcome, Andrew.
All right. Thanks for having me.
And so the session guitar, especially back then, time was money, and the producer needed many different tones right away. So they would have to bring like four different amplifiers, and then they're like, oh, okay, oh, you want more hard rock? Let me plug in this Marshall. Oh, you want cleaner? Oh, we're doing like a country kind of thing? Oh, let me go plug in this Fender. Oh, we're doing kind of a medium, like a Beatles thing? Let me plug in this Vox. And time was money. So my dad was able to, turn one amplifier into an amp that you can get like four major distinct different tones just at a flick of a button, mm-hmm. pull of a switch, and bam, you got a new tone. And which then producers love that because, like I said, time is money. Some producers like, give me a lead. The guitar player could just reach over, pull a little knob, and boom, he's got a lead tone. So his mods were, you know, he would take Fenders and add gain stages and pull switches to get some boosts and gain and so forth, and bright and, you know, different clean tones as well. And then he would, so he would make Fenders be able to get high gain like Marshalls, and then Marshalls, he'd be able to clean them up, so you get, or even getting higher gain. So he even had, you know, he dual channel, he would modify Marshalls to have two channels with concentric knobs, where each knob was like a dual function knob, mm-hmm. and it was channel switching as well. Same with the Fenders. Same with the Fenders, he actually would take the amplifier and make it channel switching, where you, like, with the click of the switch, you do lead and then you do clean. So those were a lot of the mods that he was doing. And so he made a reputation for himself back then because a lot of producers would now ask the guitarist, make sure you have a Paul Rivera modified amp. Mm-hmm. They knew, mm-hmm. like, they needed to get that tone. And some of the records, some of the famous records that, you know, some of those modified Fenders are like the Thriller album of Michael Jackson, Steely Dan records, anything that Jay Graydon did back in the day. I mean, he did a ton of records, if you know who he is. Paul Jackson Jr. back in the day, too. You know, there's so many session guys of the past, but I'm drawing a blank at the moment. But even Steve Lukather and Dennis.
Well, Lukather, I think Budimir. Didn't Larry Carlton have his amps modded too?
Larry Carlton had his amps modded as well back in the day. There was,
because he was another one that was a big Valley Arts guy.
Mm-hmm. There was a guy that got a lot of Larry Carlton's spillover was Tim May.
Tim May.
Oh, yeah. Tim May is pretty huge in TV still. You know, and these guys could also read, which you know, yeah. Tim, which is rare.
I think Lee Ritenour had one too.
Lee Ritenour, yeah, they all did. Mitch Holder was another session guy.
Mitch Holder
back in the day. So there's one more that I don't want to forget.
Tim Pierce.
Tommy Rotella. We want to make sure we throw his name in there too. Tim Pierce. Tim Pierce was probably a little more, he was a little after. It's a little more of the modern scene, you know, I would say the 90s,
yeah.
Right, Andrew? Right?
Yeah, today.
Until today. Still doing now?
No, the reason I mentioned that, too, I mean, he's been on the show before, but I was looking on your website. It's Rivera.com.
Oh, yeah.
Tim and there's a demo there. He's demoing the...
Yes, Tim rocks. We're very fortunate.
Tim May was on the show?
No, Tim Pierce.
Tim Pierce.
Cool. I'll have to check it out.
Yeah, he's a monster. He's another monster player. But, yeah, no, that I remember that a lot of guys were talking about that mid-boost, and... especially on the Fenders, it was a push pull where you would.
There was a push pull, but then there was also the five position midway switch where, you know, Jay Graydon had a lot to do with that too because he was like, look, Paul, I need thicker top end on my top strings. And, you know, that could really cut. But he would have problems with previous amplifiers where, you know, you get to the higher strings and then they'd just be too tinny. Too bright. Too tinny, right. So he really wanted to, like, thicken that area, but without making the rest of it muddy.
Right.
So that mid-range is really, really a tricky spot and where a lot of changes happen. You know, if you just affect the mid-range, everything changes. And so Jay went to my dad's like, hey, man, I really need, like, this switch so I can go between here, and get the thicker tone, man. Like, you know, I need harmonics. And he was also an engineer and a producer, too, so he really knew what he was talking about.
Right.
And my dad, you know, my dad was... One of his probably, you know, assets was he was able to understand what guitarists would ask for because they don't know the technical terms. They're just like, man, I need thicker here, man. I need more bottom end. And sometimes they don't know what the hell they're talking about. I need more bottom end. But then when you give them bottom end, they're like, it's too muddy, man. I want more gain. We'll turn up the gain. I don't like where its settings are, you know. So, but he was able to really decipher what they were saying quickly. And then he would mod and they'd be happy. And then obviously the more you would do... the more you would really understand guitar players. And I got to say, just Rivera amplification in general, just being in Los Angeles, where still a lot of music is being created. I mean, there's guys like, you know, like Andrew over here, just that right here, ready, easy to come to the show. Top producers like Joe Barisi out there that do a ton of records. Tim Pierce. You know, we're so fortunate that, you know, and with a call and a half-hour drive, I can be anywhere in L.A. and have direct communication with somebody that needs a killer tone for the record, or a producer that needs a killer tone for, you know, some upcoming project. Or if we're fine-tuning an amplifier, we have, you know, a plethora of guys that we can just tap and go, hey, man, listen to this. So, you know, if you're building an amp and you're in the middle of nowhere in population 15,000, I mean, there's one company out there that, you know, they're in a remote location and they would tune their amplifiers by the local bar. And that's it. There's no producers. There's no engineers. Mm-hmm. There's no killer session guys. It was a bar. It sounded great at the bar, you know, and that was their, which is fine, but that was just their only tuning. So yeah. It was a really limited scope, right? But here in L.A., we got a pretty wide scope. We're really fortunate about that.
Well, I think it's fascinating because of the fact that the people that were, the demand for the amp was the producers. Yes, guitarists play the amps and they're popular.
Yeah.
But it's interesting that you would have producers order the amp to put in the studio. Like, some producers have their own custom mic collection that they bring in when they do that, but it's like they have their own amp. I think that kind of tells you how specific their ears are incredible, and for your dad to be able to get what they want, that's amazing, because they're picky. Sometimes even pickier than the guitar player.
Absolutely. And sometimes, to their credit, like Tony, The guy previously who had my dad's amplifier as well, the god of session guitarists, Tommy Tedesco.
Yeah.
Thank you. Oh my God, you guitarists are hating me right now. Yes, Tedesco. I was really fortunate to meet him at a Jay Graydon party and the beach.
What was
he like? Phenomenal, hilarious. Yeah. Jay Graydon has a ton of amazing stories, but Tommy was the master at actually knowing more than the producers, and the producer was like, give me more. Oh, sure, no problem. He would reach over and just like touch the knob and not do anything. They're like, yeah, man, that's perfect. Or, you know what, man, that guitar sucks. Give me another guitar. And he literally would take the guitar, put it in the case, take the same guitar out, switch the pickup. He's like, how's that? Oh, that's perfect, man. You know? Yes. Now, probably back in the day, a lot of guys were on cocaine too, you know what I mean? So they were a little out of their minds. But
he was like that, no.
But he was like that because he was such a stellar player that he was able to decipher what the guy wanted. He knew, like, oh, this wasn't happening. So if I just change, like, my style here, you know, or the angle of my pickup or pick even, he'll probably dig that. And he was, and they loved him.
No, there's one thing that he did at the Musicians Institute that he's famous for. And he talks about, you know, there was a classical player who was asking, this guy wanted to know, this producer, if he could do this. And this classical player, very strict, said no. So he went to Tommy, and Tommy goes, sure. And he played some riff on his classical guitar. And the guy goes, okay, that's good. But, you know, I need you for another session. Can you play this other style? Can you play flamenco? Sure. And he played the same thing. He did the same thing. No problem. You know, he says, and his, one of his quotes was, all your money is below the fifth fret. That's where all your money is. And I think he was the one that did High Noon. He said, because this was in Guitar Player, he mentioned that he got paid, like, you know, double scale or whatever it was, and all he did is strums the open strings. The main theme is just the open strings of the guitar. Blah,
oh my gosh, blah, I think blah, Mitch Holder played me like a line for Barbra Streisand. There was something like that, like ding.
And he said the most money he ever made per note or whatever it was. He just did that. It was funny. He was a crazy guy. Great, great guy.
Love that.
But
well, so he was paramount too with the Rivera stuff, and you know, there was I'm not sure if Jay hooked him up or Tommy told Jay to hook him up, but
at this time when Jay was doing that, that was already when you were making the amps as Rivera amps?
No, it was still Rivera mods at that time.
Okay.
Then my dad had a chance to work for Fender because Fender went through a dark era where CBS bought the company, and the amp maker, yeah, exactly. And the amp guy who was in charge back then didn't believe there was a sonic difference in power tubes. You know, that's how he was. He was just a very numbers guy, not numbers in terms of, like, you know, financial, but just the math says this and that's that. But mm-hmm. he didn't have, you know, he wasn't a guitar player and he didn't have an understanding of that. So some of the amplifiers were not the greatest, and also the way they were built on assembly, they weren't necessarily the most reliable as well. And then a lot of them tried to be like, you know, wannabe Mesa Boogies or something, you know, and they just didn't find their thing. And so his job was to, you know, basically take their sales from a few hundred a year, you know, a couple of thousand a year domestically, and, you know, a couple thousand over here internationally, and boost up the sales. And he took them for like a couple thousand. He just, you know, he just lopped off a lot of the bad amplifiers, recreated a whole new line, like the Concert 2, the Twin Reverb 2, the Super Champ, the Montreux, the London Reverb, a couple other more, and took the sales from like, you know, 1,000, 2,000 pieces to like, you know, 20,000 pieces. And so he was really instrumental for Fender's, you know, success again with amplifiers. And that taught him a lot. And then CBS was selling the company, and he was on the vice president's side. And he and the vice president wanted to buy the company, but the president also wanted to buy the company. So then there was like a little war there. So whoever got the company first would fire the other. How's that, right?
Yeah.
So Bill Schultz got the company from CBS. So my dad's like, well, I either can, what should I do? And then at that time, Gibson, Henry Jeskowitz bought Gibson. He had it for a couple of years and then kind of, you know, was, you know, courting my dad for a while. And then, you know, it didn't really work out. My dad saw some things that he wasn't really comfortable with. And so that was the time when he decided, you know what, it's now or never. So he had 6 acres in Los Angeles Crest that he sold as capital. You know what I mean?
Wow.
And then created his amplifiers in the garage. And he had a lot of customers, and he had a big name for himself, and he knew all the distributors for Fender. So he ran around getting orders based on a napkin draw, like, I'm building this amplifier.
Wow.
Would you guys buy? Sure, sure. So he's like, okay. So he started taking orders on a napkin sketch. And back then, RAC started becoming big, right?
And what year was this?
This was 86. 1986. So 1986, RAC was starting to come up. And he's like, you know, I want to be the first preamp and power amp stereo all built into one. And so in 1986, you only had like, you know, a few knob Marshalls. You had few knob Fenders. Not very much out there. You had Boogie as well, and Boogie definitely was a pioneer in their own right for sure, but they didn't have channel switching. They had like switchable boost, you know, where they had power amps and not necessarily,
yeah,
or so forth. So he wanted all of it, and he wanted it to take it to the next level. So a stereo, and it was the first amplifier to be a preamp and power amp that was rack mountable and stereo with stereo effects loops, dual reverbs, and then P-Comp, which was a pickup compensation knob in the front. So if you had a low gain pickup and you needed more gain from your pickups, you can increase it, or vice versa. Half power switching, and it was so ahead of its time. And of course, that mid-range switch, I think at the time was called Time EQ, pull for gains. I mean, just the whole thing, you know. And boy, if we had Facebook and Instagram back then, I mean, it would have been a whole different company. But so he started taking orders, and you know, we had guys like you know, anywhere from like Tim May, I think, was the first customer. Bought it.
He still and has one, by the way.
Does he still have that, right? Yeah. So all those guys from LA, you know, they all bought into
still
it too. Does it really? Yeah. Well, it's amazing. They're so heavy. And then, you know, as Rivera progressed, and forgive me to keep going on and on, but as Rivera,
no.
You know, the sign of the times, the rack went away, so then it started getting into combos. And, you know, part of our fight for Rivera is my dad was always, this amplifier has to get many different tones for the session player. He always built for the pro and the session player because that's where he came from. He didn't, to his fault, he didn't build for the layman where they weren't used to that. So a lot of guys were turned off and scared of Rivera's because they're used to three knobs. So I don't know what that stuff is, you know? And my dad also took it for granted that session guys knew how to like plug stuff in and try things. So he wouldn't even name the channels, you know, lead and clean,
right.
You know? So it was like, for a lot of guys, it was just, it was mystifying. It was like, how the heck do I get a tone? And, you know, if you didn't know how to get a tone, you can also get bad tones, right? But a lot of the guys that didn't need to get a lot of different tones really appreciated that. And that's what he stuck with. And, of course, now you have, you know, so many amplifiers. You can't get enough tones, you know?
Right.
Well, everything
you got
that you're...
digital, you got 1,000 tones, you know?
Everything that you're saying now is, you know, like the mid-boost, all the type of things that you're talking about. You have to remember, back then, that didn't exist. Most of the amps, like most stock Fenders and stock Marshalls, they weren't that dirty. They didn't have that much gain. You had to use something or mod them to get them to really wail and scream. And, you know, everybody wanted to sound like Hendrix. But, you know, we couldn't use 6 amps fully cranked and dined out to do that. But that's the thing. And that mid boost was, I mean, I used the one a lot on the concert, but I did use a Rivera on a session, and it was great. I mean, it just fattened up the tone, and you got that sound that was big in the 70s, like Carlton would get that real bluesy type of
tone.
Yeah. And it, that amp would get that. And it's just interesting because that circuit back then, that was like, that was pretty radical for what it was at the time.
Sure.
The channel switching,
sure.
the cut, the power. I mean, everybody sees it on a lot of different amps now, but back then,
No, it was definitely ahead of its time. In fact, I think, Andrew, you're borrowing one M&S series, which is... So we did the rack mounts, and then we did combos, and we did combo forms, basically, of that amplifier, and, you know, a lot of push-pull switches, right?
Oh, yeah.
Doesn't say, it just says channel one, channel two, you don't know which is the lead, you know? But fortunately, here's the knobs, and, I mean, it's a pretty deep amp, right?
Yeah, super deep.
So he's borrowing one of the Skid Row's actual amps that they used on Slave to the Grind and the Slave to the Grind tour. And that has just, you know, a ton of push-pulls. It has a Slave Master, which is this little third circuit that's a solid-state circuit to emulate. Well, it was kind of like what Dumble was doing back in the day with Music Pets as well, where you can get, like, this low volume but mega-high gain emulating, like, you're, you know, distorting the output stage. But that's just, you know, Slave Master gain. What the heck is that
when you're just a three? And what does that circuit actually do? Does it taps the master?
It's like having a pedal inside the amplifier.
Like almost like a load?
Almost like a load. It's a little 10-watt circuit inside. So as soon as you click that on, you have your level control and you have your gain control. The level control is also the effects loop on or off, which is confusing because you're like, is this the level for the effects loop or not?
Yeah.
But of course, you know, but once you figure that out, so you can lower that, but it has its own effects loop. So if you want this like super thick lead, like your amplifier's on 1,000, you know how it gets really thick and murky? You can do that at any level when you push the Slave Master, and that was what that circuit was for.
But what's really cool is when you boosted your dad's circuit, is when you'd get that real fat sound, but it didn't bottom out. That was a big problem. You know, you could push the gain.
Well, now you're talking. Now, part of that as well back then is the EV speaker was a big part of the tone because guys were playing louder back then. And for speakers to be able to handle that kind of power and not fold and get the output stage to really distort, but not fold like you're talking about, that's where now you got to match the speaker accordingly. So, so the EV is definitely that tone for sure. It's a highly desired tone if you're getting that from that era.
Oh, really?
It's very specific. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Like the original Electro Voice EVM12s are, you know, like, you know, $500 on eBay used, and they're hard to find. And all the ones that they've reissued are nowhere near the thick plates that they normally had.
But how did his amp sound like with the Fenders? Didn't a lot of guys use the JBLs?
The JBLs as well. JBLs was another speaker that could handle lots of power and stay clean, where you could output, where you could, you know, distort the output stage, but then not have the speakers fold. So JBLs were definitely a big upgrade. That's an Eric Johnson speaker right there for a lot. You know, I know he has his own Celestian, whether he uses it or not, I have no idea, but, you know.
He has his own model. But the I always loved Fenders with JBL. It had that tone.
It had a killer tone, also a very clean and bright tone. Some of the guys didn't like that. A lot of guys also, you know, to skip ahead, as PA systems got louder, then the need for loud volumes on stage started to go lower, right? So then power started, you know, instead of 320 watts of a rack, then it's like 100, and then 100 to 50, and then now guys are running around 25 watts, and that's plenty for most, because the PA system does it. They got great in-ears. There's actually more and more everything is in-ears, but they want zero stage volume and everything coming off the wedges.
Yeah.
Hence, a lot of our amplifiers, including one of the ones that Andrew has. He has a Venus D recording. He has a great direct out if he needed it with a cab simulator built in. And then, hence, we get to the Venus recording, which is like...
Let's take a look at
which
this.
Which is really...
Yeah, and also, too, really quick, too, this incorporates everything, but also Rivera makes cab simulators and loads so that you can crank the amp and at a lower volume. So you could use, like, a Marshall 100-watt, like, in a studio situation and really push those power tubes to get that brown sound, as we call it. And
power attenuation, power attenuation. So we do well with power attenuators because, So now that stage volumes are so low, what do these guys do with all these huge 100-watt amplifiers? Then they still want the killer tone, but at low volumes, now they need a power attenuator. And just to touch the subject of digital modeling and digital amplifiers, you know, they definitely serve their purpose, and they're extremely convenient to take on tour. You know, you got a million tones, you got all your effects, they're a little box, and you go. But it's still, you know, analog never tries to be digital. Digital always tries to be analog, and it's just never... Nothing is the same except the same. You know, that EV speaker will not sound like that EV unless you get that EV speaker. So they try and it gets close, but if you want the full punch, you know, before you're going in the board and you want your full dynamics of your guitar and your full dynamics of your playing and all that responsiveness back and forth, there just there still isn't anything like analog. You know, well, it's not as convenient.
You have to move air. If you there's a difference.
Well, there's
when you're
moving air, but there's also slamming the front. But I mean, Andrew, do you have your own experiences?
Yeah, you know, you should mention the Silent Sister too, because this is a recording speaker cabinet that you guys make, and I have two of them, and I use them
right.
every day to make a living.
Well, there you go. So that's right, Andrew. So the Silent Sister is an isolation cabinet that we build.
Mm-hmm.
And what's special about this isolation cabinet is we have a pressure relief expansion chamber in it. So basically, inside the cabinet, there's this labyrinth hole where the air travels through and it extends the volume of the cabinet itself and escapes out the bottom. So mm-hmm. if you have to have your speaker, which I have Silent Sisters as well, I love our simulators. I love going direct, you know, and with the 11-band EQ, you truly can get any tone you want, period. But something about just the 57, the 421, and a real guitar speaker, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's like, amazing. I mean, because just taking a 57 and moving it an inch is a whole new sound.
Right. Totally radical. A radical change.
Yeah. So mm-hmm. just being able to do that with a real speaker, to me, it's, nothing is the same.
Nothing is the same except...
except that.
That, yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. So... anyways, I think I got a little scattered.
No, that's fine. But let's go ahead and I have set up here this amp. I'm going to have him describe it in a minute. But we have a direct out, and we also have it mic'd into a cabinet. So we're going to AB, so you can hear a little bit mm-hmm. of the difference between the two. So I'll let you explain the concept of this amp, what it does, because it does a lot. I mean, this is a pretty elaborate system.
Yeah, so the Venus Recording is a dual-channel amplifier, clean and dirty, but we wanted this to be our, you know, analog, ultimate analog modeling amplifier, mm-hmm. per se, you know? So with the 11-band EQ that can basically graph any speaker out there or your own speaker, as you can shape, that 11-band EQ, the frequency, is it within the guitar frequency range from 75 mm-hmm. hertz and that to 4K? 4K you can boost, but all guitar speakers after 5K, they're just gone. So we wanted you to be able to get these killer speaker sounds direct and not IRs, because IRs is still, once again, you're digitizing.
Right,
and
right.
The information of the impulse response is smaller because it needs to be smaller in order mm-hmm. to load fast mm-hmm. and yada, yada, yada. This is different. This hits the front end much different, much bigger. And it's also easy to layer. Because sometimes when you layer digital, it gets weird. But when you're comping analog, it sits in the mix.
Where's the EQ in the circuit? Is it after the power amp?
You can actually assign it after or before it. So if it's after, then you could actually assign that EQ to the cab. So if your cab's like, you know, my cab sucks, it's not enough bottom end or vice versa, then you can just hit that EQ and assign it to the cab. So right now, for the audience, you're going to hear the direct, and we put this little reverb pedal into the effects loop to simulate a room, because what you're going to hear through the cabinet, obviously you're hearing a condenser mic and you're hearing a room, and so it's a little different. But
yeah.
All right, so let's take it away. So right now we are on just the direct, or you want to hear the
direct
cabinet?
We're direct right now.
Okay. Do you want the lead?
I guess I'm on the clean channel.
And then we'll...
Okay, you want to go to the cabinet?
Go to the cabinet.
All right, let me open that up, and I'm going to mute the other... Now, there is a bass boom in this room, so it'll sound a little... It's not the cabinet, it's not the microphone, it's just the room, mm-hmm. but it's pretty close.
Go ahead. What speaker is in the cabinet?
Let me look. T75, which we cool. love. Yes, in T75.
Pretty flat-sounding speaker overall, right? In a nice way.
It's just versatile.
Yeah.
It's got a lot of highs, a lot of lows. And
that's what I have in my sound.
Yeah. A 7-watt setting, so we're using only a few parts.
Yeah, so he's not it's loud. That's an efficient speaker, but it's not super, you know, you can talk
right.
over it.
Yeah.
Which when you're at 7 watts, you're losing a little bit of that headroom mm-hmm. in the clean channel. So if you're at 25, it'll be a little clearer, a louder volumes too, but 7 watts is cool.
Can you click it on?
Well, I think we'll
no pull. They're gone. Go ahead.
Oh, we are? Okay, ahead. Yeah, so here we're at 7 watts, and check it out, and here's the high. Go ahead. Careful of the input. And then back to 7.
punchier.
So we'll go to the lead. So.
And now, does that affect the line out as well?
It does. It does.
Yeah.
Because it's only using part of the power tubes.
Okay, now I'm going to turn the mic off, and I'm going to go back. I'm going to go to the direct.
Okay.
So okay.
I'm going to go over here, and I'm going to pull the clean channel to get to the gain channel. So we are, what are we, direct only now?
We're direct, direct or do you want me to
here's
go to
direct,
the cap?
No, here's direct. And see, while he's playing, you can see like just the radical dynamic changes of the knobs versus the 11-band EQ. Go ahead and play.
It's right where it's right in the pocket. Now, let me ask you, the distortion I'm getting now, is that preamp, or can you give me more of a
That would be preamp and power amp at 7 watts, for sure.
Now, can you do, can you crank, we're still direct, can you give me more of the brown sound, get the power stage?
I can, but you're going to have to lower your
okay,
your
I
inputs.
Can do that.
Absolutely.
Okay, so let's try
so
that.
He's really driving it, go ahead. So you're thickening up the leads on the like.
You can hear it. You can hear it.
And then now, if we could really use the amp, because right now we're choking it at 7 watts, lower your input a little bit.
Okay, of the...
Of your board.
Of the, you're still going to be direct?
Well, now, it's going to be direct and louder.
Okay, I'll be bringing it down.
Now you're full 25 watts.
Yeah, that's a lot of gain.
It's a lot of output. But luckily we have a level control that we can lower that here too in front of them. Go ahead and play it.
That's good.
This amplifier has little markings because this amp's been on tour with Depeche Mode for the last year, so they use the Venus recordings as well.
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
Martin Gore's, I don't think you would think Depeche Mode is guitar orientated, but mm-hmm. Martin Gore definitely loves playing guitar. He's definitely a guitarist, and he still loves analog tone, which is pretty cool.
No, I mean that is controllable. Because to me, the power tubes are the secret to get really a.
And
nice.
It feels like a real amp because it is.
Like
yeah.
you feel like you're playing a real amp. Inspired. Yeah.
Well, just use your neck pickup and dial down a little bit so that.
So here's all the way up.
Yeah. Dial it down so you just get a little bit of breakup. What I call bloom. Yeah. That's one thing that. I find it's hard to do digitally. Yeah. That is to get that subtlety where you're just breaking up the input, you know, and it gives you so much dynamic.
I definitely want to then get into Andrew Sinewick's life because...
No, don't get into my life.
Well, no, I got to get into your life because...
This is your life.
Because, you know, as part of, you know, this show, you have a lot of, you have a lot of gearheads.
Mm-hmm.
What seems to have been out of control... And yes, Rivera was get you a gazillion different type of tones.
Mm-hmm.
Is now the amount of tones is so insane that people are spending way too much time having 15,000 patches than learning how to commit a killer tone and recording it. And I gotta say, and like the whole reamp thing is awesome. For sure it's fun because you go, hey man, I'll reamp and get all these tones, but it's like reamp is like not teaching you to commit. And then you're like, that magic that you just had that was so awesome is totally gone.
Right.
You're just fussing around and you're just losing time. And like, you're no longer making music. You're playing video games. Andrew, you're a session player.
I'll tell you a story. I had a younger player that hit me up and said, hey, I want to... He's a very fine player and he's in school learning to, you know, he's in music school for guitar. And he's got a cool rig. He's got a pedal board and a nice amp and he gets good tones. But he hit me up and he said, hey, I want to get more into recording. What software would you suggest that I buy for getting guitar tones? And I went, no, no, you're looking at it totally wrong. I would suggest you spend $99 on an SM57. And he already had some, you know, like GarageBand or whatever. Put that in, sit in front of your amp, dial it in, make it sound good, put the 57 in there. And it's probably going to sound bad, actually, the first time you do it, because you don't know what you're doing. And that's the point. Then move it like an inch at a time and go, okay, okay, I see. It gets darker as I go to the edge. It gets brighter as I go to the center. Let me put it right at the center. Oh, it's too bright. It's like ice picky. Well, let me, oh, it's too dark. Let me, you know, find that sweet spot and get to know your rig and get to know what a 57 sounds like on your amp. And then from there, sure, get into all the other crazy stuff. But, I mean,
and then you can do pedals in the front and so forth and get subtleties and changes. Yeah. But ultimately, I mean...
You have to know how to get a good sound with the 57 and your amp.
But I think also, too, Andrew, you'll agree, there's sometimes when you play a great amp, I mean, you or even like a great guitar, but if it's a... You get this amp and it's really happening... You play differently. You respond to it. And that's where reamping doesn't... Because you're responding to the moment. When you hear that amp and it's getting that tone that you want, you're going to play different. You're going to play to bring out that tone more. And I think that's... You lose that when you, you know, when you're processing.
Oh, totally. Now, if you have like a really crappy setup and you're like, I'm reamping later because I will have awesome
stuff. Right, right, right.
That's one thing.
Yeah.
but
especially when you're playing, like you're doing a lead or something, you're doing something where it's really, you know, meaningful and you're really trying to get the moment, you react to the whole system. It's all together. It's not just playing notes. It's the whole thing together.
I also think there's just no way bands like Led Zeppelin would exist if, you know, Jimmy did not have a freaking amp hitting his legs, you know. Or even Jimi Hendrix with a loud 4x12s hitting his body where he's, like, really immersed in his guitar in a different way than near-field monitors. Near-field monitors are fine, and you can jam all day and play and get inspired, too.
Well, I think what we're talking about is, like, people go, oh, it's the guitar, and the guitar this, guitar that. But the amp, I mean, this is not very inspiring to play, you know, the sound of an electric guitar not plugged in.
Not plugged in.
Well, the sound is the guitar plus the amp.
But speaking of Hendrix, for example, listening to like, you know, the Band of Gypsies, which is one of the better recordings. I mean, it's one of my favorites. But part of his tone, he was getting feedback and he was generating stuff without the, you know, he used the fuzz face to boost his get his gain up. But basically amps were like around 6 or 7. And he would get this clean sound. You'd hear this clean sound because you can hear him when he's starting to tune between the songs. But he would play the cleaner sound and dig in, and then he would stand in front of there, and the guitar would feedback. It's almost like a clean feedback. It wasn't like a blowout sound, but he was getting these amazing tones and amazing sustain because it was so loud, and the guitar was responding to it. And you can't do that on a simulator. You can't do that synthetically. It just doesn't work. You have to move the guitar to get it to do that. And that's part of his tone. You when you use a lot of heavy gain and stuff, you know, process stuff, you can't get those subtleties that he was getting. He would get some amazing sounds, but the volume.
No question.
You know?
Inspiration. And there's another guitar player, you know, the guitar player Adam Jones of Tool. I mean, that guy is definitely a master at playing his guitar with his amplifier and just setting his tone control the perfect setting to clean it up and then getting that feedback. I mean, there's so much communication between his guitar and that amplifier to get that feedback, which created, there's no way, I don't think, there wouldn't be Tool if you didn't have that swelling and, you know, sustain and all
that
stuff.
They did that with a pod, I think.
Yeah. Can you imagine?
Now, what's the how much power does this have full blown?
So that's a pair of 6V6s, and it's 25 watts.
25 watts.
And 25 watts this day and age, you know, is definitely more than enough.
Mm-hmm.
For guys like, you know, what's tricky is for heavy metal guys, like let's say Slipknot, where they're playing in drop B or drop A, when they're rehearsing or they're playing at home, if they're in the garage, they like to push some air and get some, you know, some inspiration from that too. So when you're tuning that low, and if you're at loud volumes, 25 watts is not going to be what 100 watt does. And 100 watt, blasting 100 watt, sorry about this, I just ate a hot pastrami sandwich and it's like giving me trouble. But when you're playing a 100 watt amplifier in a 4x12 and you're standing in front of it and it's loud, you're just writing completely different riffs, you know, and you have more headroom and more chest and more throat. And because you have more throat and chest and everything, riffs sound different. So you can write different.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're attempting to write at that volume with 25 watts, it's going to be murky and crappy. And then you're not going to play those same exact notes. So like there's like your situation of how you're playing and how you come up with riffs.
Mm-hmm.
It's really important to find the balance for that. Am I right,
Andrew? Absolutely, yeah. The tone is everything.
The tone
you
is
gotta
everything.
You got to be inspired.
You got to be inspired in order to, so.
And how about some of the modern amps that you're making for guys, you know, like Slipknot? Or?
So, like, we had this one model called the KR7, which is a three-channel amplifier, and that's a 120-watt amplifier, tube amp with the EL34s, and Mick Thompson, that's his signature model. And, you know, at that time, he needed a lot of volume because he liked a lot of headroom. And even if it wasn't super loud on stage, the fact that he had that headroom, he got more attack on his guitars and so forth. So he was very instrumental in tuning that amplifier, which was based off of what was called a knucklehead reverb.
Mm-hmm.
But Mick went in there and actually it was fine-tuned, you know, the highs and mids and so forth, and really tailored it. But he also, a lot of guys don't know, he really wanted all guitar players to really like that amplifier. He didn't want to be like, okay, it's Carousel, must be Slipknot only. And that amplifier records beautifully. I mean, I have a lot producers in LA and guitar players around that just borrow that amplifier and lay all sorts of different types of tones.
What tubes are in it?
EL34s.
So it's like a Marshall.
Yeah.
It's like a Marshall setup.
And then after that came the knucklehead tray, which was an added gain stage for the guys that love a lot of gain, but adding the gain stage gives you a thick texture on the note, but without having to have all this hiss. So like if you only have X amount of preamp tubes and you want to squeeze out gain, you're going to squeeze it out, but then you're going to raise the noise floor.
Right.
So if you add gain stages, you can get that kind of gain, but without adding noise floor.
Right, right. Now, real quick, the J. Graydon model, is that, what tubes are in that?
So that was 5 preamp tubes, and that was EL34s as well. And J. Graydon, you know, that amplifier was based off the original knucklehead, but J. Graydon massaged that as well for him. Excuse me. And that is more than, you know, the Fenders were amazing and all the mods, but all the Revere since then, you know, their tone pods and so forth have wide dynamic ranges. I mean, the bass control from 2 to 8 is huge.
Right.
And on a Fender, it's not. It's, you know, oh, here's my tone. You can't really. The good thing about that is it's hard to screw it up. So no matter what you do with the Fender, like, you're going to get that tone. It's hard to mess up. If you're not used to twiddling knobs, you can get a bad tone on Revere. If you're like, what is?
I mean, and I've literally heard, like, you know, amp builders talk about, man, I can't, I got to make my amp sound so that any guy that like goes to the LA amp show and plugs in, it's, he can't get a bad sound out of it.
Right.
But the
right.
problem is when you're working and somebody goes, you know, oh, it's got too much like upper mid range. Can you dial that out?
You can't.
No, sorry. You know, what so am see, I supposed to do?
That see, thing? that's the amp builder building for the layman. Versus the amp builder building for the professional.
For the professional, yeah.
You know, it's just different.
Now, we're almost out of time. I do want to talk about the other thing that Revere is doing is the pedals.
Okay.
So let's do a little bit of background real quick, and then let's show them the two that you have here.
Okay, so you're holding the 3D Chorus, and the 3D Chorus is a chorus and a vibrato pedal.
Mm-hmm.
And we use real, real Panasonic BBD chips, like the real Bucket Brigades.
Mm-hmm.
And so we haven't raised the price on this yet because those chips are really hard to go to get.
Mm-hmm.
Supposedly, the new BBDs or their BBD clones are exactly the same, but it's actually not true because we've tested them.
Mm-hmm.
They're a lot colder, but not as cold as digital. So if you take like an old Boss pedal and take a new Boss pedal, a lot of people don't know the new Boss pedals are all DSP, and it's just 1 second. Why is this so much colder than the Boss pedal from 10 years ago? You know. But anyways, these BBDs, though, there's a lot in there. They're just, it's just warm. And this was based off or this was the answer to, back in the day, my dad would modify the CE1 chorus. They were really noisy back then, but he would get them, he'd clean them up, change the tone a little, add line level controls, massage it, and that CE1 chorus was used on a ton of records.
Oh, that's a
ton
classic.
Of records.
Yes.
A ton of records. So this 3D chorus was like basically get that and more. And then over here is the Sustain Shaman. This is a dual channel compressor pedal using VCAs. And VCAs for compression. Do you see that? I don't know if you see
yeah.
that.
Yeah. VCAs, voltage control amplifiers, very popular in older recording consoles.
It's really smooth and it reminds me of Distressor. And it's one of the few compressor pedals that actually has two channels mm-hmm. with separate attack and sustain knobs and a blend control and a super sustain switch.
while you're coughing, let's try that real quick. And then I want to play both of these real quick so everybody can hear them. You want clean?
Yeah.
Cool. So right now we're doing extreme okay. sustain with a lot of compression.
Okay.
So you can hold out the notes.
It's clean. Now we're getting a little bit of noise from the fluorescent lights.
Okay.
So that's normal, but the thing is that thing's quiet.
Well, also, see how much sustain he can add to that? It's clean. But he's getting clean sustain. And we have an effects blend where he can dial out some of the compressor and blend in some of the clean.
So you're getting a little bit of the... Yeah.
The non-effect and the effect. So now you have a mixture of both. You have
yeah.
the signal without being compressed and the compressor.
That is really nice.
And then if you want a light compression, where it's a little more transparent, we'll just use this. So now you don't hear the squawking, but it keeps it contained when you're doing some rhythms.
Yeah.
The story of these pedals. These are really way overbuilt.
Mm-hmm. No, they're heavy.
They're heavy. Yeah, they're hard to get because at Revere everything is really handmade, and pedals, you know, our amplifiers are higher priority.
Yeah,
and unfortunately, you know, we haven't really preached the pedals because we're like, we don't want too many orders because we can't ship them. You know what I mean? We don't want to piss people off. So, but really, the 3D chorus is really a secret because. It's the only current production chorus pedal that's being used with real Panasonic BBD chips, you know, and these chips are big bucks. I mean, we should be charging $700 for this pedal, and maybe I will raise the price soon, but at the same time, like, we're keeping it low down, and we're just using what we have.
Well, let's, I'll mute you.
I want to hear this.
I'm dying to hear this thing.
Well, what's cool about this pedal real quick is there's three outs. There's left, right, and center dry.
Oh, wow.
So a lot of guitar players would use a 3-amp setup.
Mm-hmm.
Where they'd have left and right that's wet, mm-hmm. and the center dry, because when you have your center dry at all times, none of your bottom end falls out. And that's what happens when you click on a chorus.
That's right,
play. Sometimes
yeah.
your bottom end fall out. But a lot of people don't have three amplifiers.
He's muted, so you can go ahead and plug. It shouldn't make
He's
any,
muted? Okay,
yeah,
so.
Yeah, I have the output muted.
All right, we'll go through the effects then.
Okay, I'm dying to hear this thing.
Yeah, you want to go through the
good old Bucket Bird Brigade.
Okay, send is in the input.
Okay, we good?
Vibrato. much time do we have? I want to make sure I give a shout out to my friend over here, Craig.
Yes, Craig.
Who made this thing happen for us, which is really cool.
Craig, yes, thank you so much for putting this together. We got about a couple of minutes, okay. But I just want to mention it's www.rivera.com and go directly to the website to order. Is everything ordered direct, or do you have stores?
We have stores and dealers, yeah.
Okay.
So, but they all have links and so forth on the website and so forth, yeah.
Okay. Now, one question before we leave. The tremolo circuit, the vibrato circuit on this, what's that? Is that based on the old Fender? Because you remember there was the old one that had like its own dedicated tube, or is it a...
It's my father's take on just what's a rich, warm...
Because that thing is smooth. I mean, the chorus is really smooth, but the vibrato.
Yeah, and if you heard the chorus in a stereo format, it's really, really brings it out. Yeah, you know.
No, it's no. That's a great. That is a great pet. Both of them. They're really clean. You're right. They're made. They're quiet and they're really. I mean, it's.
What's Andrew? What's your website?
Yes.
AndrewSinewick.com. And if you can spell that, you win a prize. If you get close on Google, you'll find
Let me spell it for you here. It's S-Y-N-O-W-E-I-C, right?
I-E-C.
I-E-C.
See, that's what happens.
Ah, I before E. There we go. And Craig, do you want to give any information, contact information for you?
Oh, sure. It's expertiseinmedia.com.
Okay.
We met, Craig, you want to tell the story? Or?
Yeah, actually, Paul and I met, we're both car freaks. So we were doing a TV show with a family called the Barbusha family, Damien and Franco, and called The Car Father. And Paul was over there. They were doing retuning an exhaust. And jump in.
So I wanted to do a video, what's louder, this Lamborghini... With this insane exhaust system, Lamborghini Diablo, or the Rivera 50-watt Fandango, right? And the mechanic, where the mechanic's son plays guitar, Damien. And so he's playing through a 4x12 at 55 watts while this Lamborghini Diablo's revving. The Lamborghini one, I'm pretty sure, because it was just, I don't think there was catalytic converters. Shh, don't tell that. But
He needed the knucklehead to kick him.
We needed 100 watts next time, rematch.
It's still online, too. It's Franco's European Sports Cars.
I have to check that out. That's too funny.
You can see the video?
You can still see the video on awesome.
Well, listen, guys, thank you so much for coming
on.
We'll have to do it
us.
Again. And I love this. This thing is great. Everybody, I will have a great week. We will see you next week. But check out this stuff. These amps are great, and these pedals are really great. And I'm really grateful to have you guys here. It's a real honor to have you here. Everybody have a great night. We will talk to you later.